7th at the Flatow Markham Theater, 171 Town Center Boulevard. Tickets and more information available at alexcuba.com. Don't miss an opportunity to see Alex Cuba live in Oakville on April 26th and Markham on April 27th.
Both these events are physically accessible.
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции. Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы. Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества. Ура!
The death toll of Palestinians from anti-occupation protests at the hands of the Israeli army in the Gaza Strip continues to climb. At least 10 Palestinians, including a journalist, who succumbed to his injuries, are the latest fatalities from the protests along the so-called buffer zone. The regime forces also injured more than 1,300 people, including women, children, and several journalists. The Palestinian Journalist Syndicate called for the perpetrators to be held accountable. The latest deaths bring to 30 the number of Palestinians killed by the Israelis since March 30th, when the March of the Great Return began.
Thousands of Palestinians took part in another anti-Israeli protest along the so-called buffer zone between the Gaza Strip and the occupied territories. The protest was part of a rally dubbed the Great Return March, which started last Friday and would last for another 5 weeks. Last week, Israeli snipers opened fire on peaceful protesters, killing 17 Palestinians and injuring many others. This Friday, dubbed the Friday of Tires, protesters burned tires close to the border fence in an attempt to block the vision of the snipers who have been authorized by Tel Aviv to shoot with no inhibition.
Our message to the world is that we Palestinians have been driven out of our land and have been killed and forced to leave. Yet this uprising is melting all political differences between us and bringing us together. We shall return to our land despite all the obstacles, injuries, and the killing of our people.
Israeli forces once again opened fire on the peaceful protesters and used tear gas to disperse them, causing more casualties.
We came last Friday for our right to return. We came again this Friday to prove to Israel that even if there are people who were killed or injured, we will not be afraid and we will protest until our land is freed. I will come till May 15th without any fear of being killed or injured.
Israel's killing of peaceful protesters last week drew widespread criticism. However, the regime continues its deadly crackdown regardless of international outrage.
We came here without weapons, although we have weapons. We came here in peace without rockets, although we have rockets, to let everyone know that we will never give up on our lands.
Human rights organizations say approaching the fence is not an offense, punishable by death or serious injury. Despite Israel's use of violence, Palestinians are determined to continue their protests against the massive confiscation of their land. They also call on the international community to take action against the atrocities committed by the Israeli forces. Hala Safadi, Press TV, Gaza.
Comrades, you're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM, CFRU. I am Siegfried, and over the past few weeks, over the last few episodes of the show, I've been focused on struggles against colonialism and how the struggle against colonialism around the world remains the key political struggle of our time. I discussed the massacre that took place in Gaza on Good Friday, which is Land Day in occupied Palestine, and which we now know claimed the lives of 20 unarmed Palestinian demonstrators and injured literally thousands more, at least 773, with live ammunition, shot by more than 100 snipers that the Israeli army deployed on that day in response to this unarmed campaign of civil disobedience by Palestinians. And as the Press TV report, which I just played there, 10 more have been killed just yesterday, on Friday. So we're seeing more massacres taking place. That was and is how the Israeli colonial authorities respond to unarmed demonstrators from an occupied nation demanding their rights under international law. Assad Abu Sherek, the spokesperson of what was dubbed the Great March of Return, said that, quote, the march is organized by refugees, doctors, lawyers, university students, Palestinian intellectuals, academics, civil society organizations, and Palestinian families. The protests are set to continue until May 15th, when Palestinians will commemorate the 70th anniversary of the Nakba, or catastrophe. The day marks the date of 700,000 Palestinians when they were expelled or fled from their towns and cities after the creation of the State of Israel on May 14th, 1948. This is a recap from the real news on what happened last Friday. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Tens of thousands of Palestinians living under a suffocating Israeli blockade in Gaza organized a massive peaceful march on the border with Israel, and they were met with a sea of bullets. Israel crushed the historic protest with extreme violence, mowing down the unarmed protesters. More than 1,400 Palestinians were injured. The Israeli military deployed more than 100 snipers who shot 773 protesters with live ammunition. At least 16 Gazans were killed in the massacre. Israel's military later openly admitted that the massacre had been intentional and pre-planned. The IDF wrote on Twitter, quote, "Everything was accurate and measured, and we know where every bullet landed." Soon after, it deleted these tweets admitting responsibility. The demonstration, which was dubbed the Great Return March, had been organized for months in order to demand the right Palestinian refugees have under international law to return to their homes, which Israel ethnically cleansed in 1948. The protesters also condemned Israel's decade-long blockade of the Gaza Strip, which United Nations experts have explicitly said is illegal. Because of this smothering siege, 1.8 million Palestinians are trapped inside Gaza with little water, food, and electricity. Even the United Kingdom's conservative former Prime Minister David Cameron has described the Israeli-besieged Gaza Strip as a prison camp and open-air prison. The Real News spoke about the historic protest with journalist Max Blumenthal, who recently reported from on the ground in Gaza.
This protest was also against the Israeli policy in the buffer zone, where Israel controls territory inside Gaza and shoots people at will. But it was also about demonstrating the legitimate claim that Palestinians have to their land and property inside Israel, according to UN Resolution 194, which was passed by the UN and gives Palestinians the right of return, which all refugees have. This protest is the unarmed demonstration that we've heard a lot of liberal Zionist pundits call for over the years when they've demanded that there be a Palestinian Gandhi to rise up and lead his people in nonviolent unarmed demonstrations. In 2011, at the height of the Arab Spring, or the so-called Arab Spring, Thomas Friedman wrote a column in the New York Times demanding that Palestinians embark on a giant peace march, a nonviolent protest march in Jerusalem to protest the occupation. And he said that this march, if it was peaceful, would immediately trigger a response in Israeli society with gestures towards peace in Israel. And that was an absurd column, because these marches and this kind of tactic of unarmed resistance has been witnessed in Palestinian villages for years and years and years, and the world just turns its head and ignores it. And then these clueless figures like Thomas Friedman say, well, why don't they do that when they're doing it? And so they've done it again today in a massive demonstration, very similar to some of the demonstrations we saw in 2011 by Palestinian refugees in Syria and in Lebanon. They just simply marched to the border, and they were cut down by Israeli snipers. There's reports of Israel actually lobbing artillery with tanks into the buffer zone. And in the days leading up to this march, Israel was testing drones that dropped tear gas from the air on protesters. So this massive display of violence really shows Israel's response to the Palestinian Gandhi, which is pure violence, no tolerance for it, and, you know, complete silence from mainstream American media. I've been sitting around watching CNN and MSNBC off and on today, and, you know, I get glimpses of discussions about Stormy Daniels and Vladimir Putin's global super bomb, but nothing about this.
Legal experts say Israel effectively occupies the Gaza Strip, tightly controlling everything and everyone that enters and leaves. Blumenthal discussed the militarization of the Gaza border and the Israeli military's regular killings of Palestinians who enter a buffer zone Israel has unilaterally imposed.
The border of Gaza that used to be covered with, you know, barbed wire in some places back in the early 50s is now a gigantic concrete wall. I was in Gaza a few weeks ago. I passed through that wall. It was the second time I entered, and I always look to my right as I'm walking through the buffer zone between Israel and where people are allowed to live in Gaza, and it's about 300 meters. People in Gaza are not allowed to enter the buffer zone. If they do, they'll be shot by Israel, and they'll not only be shot by Israeli snipers, there's a remote-controlled machine gun that's permanently planted atop that concrete wall, and it's operated from miles away by an all-female battalion of soldiers in the Negev Desert, who are basically pushing joystick buttons and shooting anyone who approaches the border wall.
While Israel's massacre of the Gaza protesters did get some attention in the U.S. corporate media, outlets frequently used misleading and ambiguous language to create a false equivalence between the unarmed Palestinian protesters and the heavily armed Israeli military. The New York Times described the one-sided Israeli slaughter of Palestinian protesters as clashes and confrontations. Blumenthal addressed the bias and hypocrisy in Western media reporting.
Well, I mean, just having been inside Gaza and being in Palestine for, you know, years off and on, I mean, people do use the language of clashes on the Palestinian side. It's just part of the local language. But if you're a Western reader, the language of clashes does obfuscate the imbalance in power, because you have Israeli snipers with advanced sniper rifles, barrages of tear gas, those rubber bullets, and as I mentioned, artillery is actually being used against these protesters. The protesters do throw rocks, and maybe they have some burning tires. And sometimes I've seen them throw the tear gas back. So, you know, you can pretty much see that that these aren't like equal clashes, but with two armies armed with light weapons and tanks. It's, you know, youth with stones, but generally youth with signs and cameras and flags against, you know, walking into the teeth of one of the most advanced militaries in the world. And so I do think that language obfuscates the situation. This is a massacre. It's very similar to the Sharpeville massacre in South Africa. It recalls the Mavi Marmara massacre in 2010, and the massacres we witnessed on the Israeli borders with Lebanon and Syria of refugees attempting to march to their homes. And, you know, worse than that, we saw the New York Times describe the march this way: a peaceful march by Gazans to the border of Israel turned bloody. It just simply turned bloody. So we don't know if people inside the march started, you know, all of a sudden they pull out their, you know, machine guns and suicide vests. I mean, we just don't know, because it just turned bloody. Actually, Israel turned it bloody by shooting them, and that's just too much for the New York Times to acknowledge.
The Israeli government tried to justify its bloody crackdown on unarmed protesters by claiming that they were rioting and covering up so-called terror attacks by Hamas, the Islamist political party that was elected to govern Gaza. But Blumenthal argued the protest shows the exact opposite to be true.
Well, when I was in Gaza, you actually saw preparations already underway for some kind of march like this. There were protest tents set up, and every week on Friday there were demonstrations by local youth. Basically, they would go to the border and throw rocks at Israeli soldiers, hold up Palestinian flags, chant. So this was already kind of underway, and, you know, over the years, these youth who have no affiliation with any faction, they're not Hamas, they're not being sent there by anyone, they're kind of just like independent. They've been chased away at certain points by the Al-Qassam brigades, which is Hamas's internal security and arm and military arm. You know, Hamas is the ruler of the Gaza Strip, and they control what happens on the borders. So basically what happened here is Hamas has decided to kind of authorize what people in Gaza and Gaza's civil society has wanted to do for a long time, and they've given them the latitude to march to the border. And that's really upsetting to Israel. It's really upsetting to the whole pro-Israel community. What this shows is that Hamas is embracing nonviolent, unarmed demonstrations rather than embracing the strategy they put on display in 2014, which is armed resistance. And, you know, this is actually more terrifying in a way to Israel, that this technique, which really came from the grassroots of Palestinian society, has always been at the heart of Palestinian resistance, has been authorized by a group that Israel and its allies have attempted to define as this gigantic terror threat.
Under international law, millions of Palestinian refugees have the right of return to historic Palestine. The Great Return March on the Gaza border was organized expressly to highlight this fact. Blumenthal situated the demonstration in the historical context of the Nakba, the name for the mass expulsion of Palestinians in 1948.
To understand why people are marching to what's considered the border between Gaza and Israel, you have to understand what Gaza is. Gaza is basically a human warehouse for refugees who are pushed out of their land and their property in 1947 and 1948 during the systematic campaign of ethnic cleansing by Zionist militias and what eventually became the Israeli military. Some 750,000 people were turned into refugees in order to establish the state of Israel with a Jewish majority. A substantial number of those refugees went south towards Gaza, which was then under the control of Egypt, and Israel proceeded to pass a series of laws like the Prevention of Infiltration Act, which defined all of those people who'd been pushed into Gaza as infiltrators and enabled their criminal prosecution and their capture, their violent capture, if they re-entered into what became Israel. David Ben-Gurion ordered his troops to shoot anyone who attempted to infiltrate again. And the Gaza border, ever since the early 50s, has really been the site of extreme brutality by Israel's border guards against people trying to get back home from Gaza. Here we are, 70 years later, and people are still trying to walk home. It's what they consider home.
Blumenthal also highlighted the irony that Israel carried out this massacre of protesters on the beginning of the religious holiday of Passover, which is meant to celebrate an enslaved people liberating itself from oppression.
Tonight, my family and friends and I are going to celebrate what we consider to be a festival of liberation, the liberation of the Hebrews from Egyptian bondage. And it's something that's really, close to our tradition, not only as Jews, but as, progressive people who believe in the liberation of all people. And it's really ironic to see a state that claims the mantle of world Judaism, claims to speak for all Jews, not only, obstructing the liberation of the Palestinian people, but guaranteeing it with pure violence. And rejecting all forms of dialogue. What the Palestinians are doing right now in Gaza, what these mostly young people are doing, is they're calling on the world, and they're calling on the better angels of the world. They're reaching out and asking for solidarity, and they're being cut down, and in the U.S. they're basically being ignored by our media. If this call is rejected again and again, what other option do they have? So I think for everyone who's observing Passover tonight, it's important to reflect on what's happening on the Gaza border and how a state that is claiming to speak on behalf of world Judaism is carrying out an act that flies in the face of anything that can be considered liberationist, humane, or anything remotely connected to the traditions that I'm going to observe at the Seder table tonight.
Reporting for The Real News, I'm Ben Norton.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. So that was Ben Norton and Max Blumenthal basically doing the report that they did last week on The Real News Network about the massacre that took place in Gaza and which is still going on. Now, and once again, it has to be stressed again and again. According to international law and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, all refugees have the right of return to their country of origin or of citizenship voluntarily. Palestinians have upheld their right to return to the land from which they were expelled, but also to the properties of their forebears. It has to be pointed out the Gaza-Israel boundary where the protests have been taking place, and this is something Max Blumenthal just pointed out quite well. It's not a border between two sovereign states, but a armistice line between an occupying power and the population living under its military rule. More than half of the 2 million people who live in Gaza are refugees. But this didn't stop the Israeli army from again using lethal force yesterday, on Friday, April 6th, when at least 9 more, and possibly 10, unarmed Palestinians were shot dead during protests along the separation barrier between Gaza and Israel. Yesterday, Palestinian journalist Yasser Murtaja, a 30-year-old cameraman with Een Media, became the 29th Palestinian killed since the start of the protests on March 30th. Murtaja was shot in the stomach by Israeli forces in Kuza in the south of the Gaza Strip while covering a demonstration along the Gaza border, and later died of his wound. Hundreds gathered Saturday to accompany Murtaja's family at his funeral. Two of the others who were killed were identified by the health ministry in Gaza and the human rights group Al-Mazan as children under the age of 18, Hussein Mohammed Adnan Mahdi, 13, shot in the stomach with live fire east of Gaza City, and Ala al-Din Yahya al-Zamli, fatally wounded east of Rafah. Also in Rafah, Israeli soldiers shot in the head Mohammed Sayed Musa al-Hajj Saleh, 33, killing him. In Khan Yunis, also in Gaza's south, Usama Kamis Musalam Kudei, 29, died after he was shot in the head by soldiers. In central Gaza, east of Deir al-Balah, two Palestinians died after they were shot in the head by soldiers, Ibrahim Zayed Salama al-Ar, 20, and Suchi Talib Muhammad Abu al-Atawa, 45. Both men were from Nusayrat refugee camp. Hamza Abdul Al-Al was 20, was also shot and killed in the eastern boundary of central Gaza. In northern Gaza, Majdi Ramadan Musa Shabat, 38, died after he was shot in the neck with live fire. An eighth victim, Tayyar Muhammad Rabah, 30, died on Friday from injuries he sustained during the first day of the Great March of Return protests in northern Gaza on the 30th of March. In an effort to prevent a repetition of last Friday's high casualties, Palestinians had attempted to obscure the vision of Israeli snipers by burning tires as a smokescreen. And this may have succeeded in lessening the number of fatalities as compared to last week. But despite these efforts, more than 1,300 Palestinians were injured, around 30 of them critically, by Israeli forces in Gaza on Friday. Nearly 500 were injured by live fire, the Gaza Health Ministry stated, and paramedics at the protests were overwhelmed by the number of injuries, just as they were last week, with two of the Red Crescent's posts unable to cope. Just like last week, Israeli officials openly admitted that they are willfully targeting protesters, unarmed protesters, with military spokesperson Avichai Adrie stating on Friday that, quote, anyone who thinks he can hide behind the lenses of our forces is wrong. We see you clearly, unquote. Embedded in Adrie's tweet was an image that appeared to show Palestinian civilians, including a child, seen through binoculars or a scope. So far, all attempts to initiate a thorough independent investigation of the carnage in Gaza under the auspices of the UN Security Council have been blocked by the U.S. Both the U.S. and the EU have failed to condemn Israel, defending the apartheid state's use of force, quote, when defending its legitimate security interests, while at the same time grotesquely admonishing the Palestinians to, quote, remain strictly nonviolent. I mean, not that imperialists admonishing colonized people to remain nonviolent is anything new. When Nelson Mandela visited Washington, D.C. in June 1990, President George Bush Sr., the same George Bush who had just bombed Panama to smithereens and was about to do the same to Iraq in the first Gulf War, saw fit to lecture him, to lecture Nelson Mandela on the virtues of nonviolence, going so far as to quote Dr. Martin Luther King. This at a time when the African National Congress, Mandela's organization, was still locked in a life and death struggle against a violently repressive apartheid regime that the U.S. had supported for decades. Michael Parenti writes, quote, Bush's capacity for selective perception had all the unexamined audacity of a dominant ideology that condemns only those who act against an unjust status quo, not those who use violence to preserve it. And of course, we see the same dominant ideology condemning those who act against the unjust status quo in Gaza and in Palestine as a whole, not against those who use violence to preserve it. And of course, all this ties into what I discussed last week about how anti-colonial struggle remains the crucial political struggle of our time all around the world, from Burnaby, BC, where the Kinder Morgan pipeline is being expanded on stolen native land, to Gaza, where the indigenous population is actively being massacred by a ruthless settler colonial state. Indeed, in a statement this week, the Communist Party of Canada compared the Good Friday massacre in Gaza to the Sharpeville massacre in apartheid South Africa back in 1960, where 69 unarmed black South African demonstrators were shot to death by the police. And they made it absolutely clear that the Communist Party stands in full solidarity with the Palestinian struggle for self-determination and has remained steadfast in that solidarity for decades now, just as it remained steadfast in supporting the long struggle against apartheid in South Africa. Now, some of you might not be aware of this, fact that last weekend was the Easter weekend, was the 102nd anniversary of the Irish Easter Rising against the British Empire and British colonial rule in Ireland in 1916. And as many of you, well, maybe you know, maybe you don't know, Ireland was never granted full independence by the UK. The six counties of the north remain under British occupation to this day, and resistance to that occupation continues. There's still anti-colonial struggle going on in Ireland. And perhaps it comes as no surprise that Ireland, with its ongoing history of anti-colonial struggle, remains a true bastion of solidarity with Palestine and the Palestinian national struggle for self-determination. And this was made loud and clear on Easter Monday, 2018, in the city of Derry, in occupied Northern Ireland, a city which itself witnessed a Gaza-like massacre on Bloody Sunday, January 30th, 1972, when British paratroopers murdered 14 unarmed civil rights protesters. And there was some of that recognition in this speech at an Easter Monday demonstration, which not only marked the 102nd anniversary of the Easter Rising, but also was a Palestine solidarity rally organized by the Irish Friends of Palestine. And at this rally, Nuri, activist for Radical Irish Republican Political Party, Sroedet, I'm completely butchering that word, by the way. I cannot pronounce the name of this party, of this political party, but it's a radical Republican, Irish Republican party pushing for self-determination in Northern Ireland. The activist speaking, Stephen Murnay, he gave the following address, which is definitely worth quoting in full. So I will. This is the speech that he gave. He said, "It's a privilege to have been invited to address this year's commemoration here in Derry City to mark the historic 1916 Easter Rising. I want to pay tribute to the Derry 1916 Commemoration Committee for organizing this event. Firstly, let me express our solidarity to our comrades in Palestine who are currently facing the onslaught of Israeli aggression. We salute the resilient Palestinian people in their struggle for true freedom. Your struggle is our struggle, and our struggle is yours. It's at times like this that international solidarity is vital. Any population unfortunate enough to find itself under foreign occupation will inevitably stretch out in solidarity and friendship to those in similar situations. To the people of Palestine, we salute you. I am proud to be here to honor the soldiers of Ireland, of this and previous generations. Easter is a time when Republicans gather at gravesides and monuments across Ireland to remember those who have died in pursuit of Irish freedom. It is also a time when we recommit ourselves to the pursuance of Republican objectives, objectives which were clearly enunciated in the Proclamation of 1916. Many of these objectives are unfulfilled and unfinished. Derry is a city close to my own heart. I have come to know quite well, both in I've come to know it quite well, both in prison and on the streets, the Republican revolutionaries that are active in this area, and many of you are standing here before me today. For decades, Derry has been to the fore in the war against British occupation. IRA volunteers from this city took up gun, grenade, and mortar and engaged the British Army and RUC Crown Forces throughout the years, right up until the present day, to rid Ireland of the foreign oppressor. I'm not going to gloss over the fact that I'm not going to gloss over what the Easter Rising was. I'll make it very clear. 1916 was a defining moment in the history of the struggle for social and economic liberation, a defining moment for the freedom struggle that began generations beforehand. The 1916 Rising was a bloody and fierce attempt to end British occupation, It was a violent and vicious example of armed insurrection, a small minority of unashamed rebels taking on the might of the British Empire and holding them off for a week. This was unthinkable at the time. This was armed struggle at its finest. Others try to downplay those facts. Those same people who are also those who are remorseful and apologetic for the actions of the Republicans. They don't speak on our behalf. Republicans have nothing to regret or show remorse for. We are sorry about nothing. Irish freedom won't be achieved by fawning and groveling over the British monarchy, nor by jumping through hoops and tipping the cap for bigoted unionism. There can be no reconciliation with the forces of reaction. Republicans are currently making incredible inroads in providing a credible alternative within the socialist Republican struggle. We have smashed through the many barriers placed before us. We have much more to do. We face a mammoth task ahead of us. Revolutionary hubs are being established north and south. The Republican activists involved work tirelessly on a daily basis to rebuild and reinvigorate the Republican struggle whilst showing support and giving assistance to Republican prisoners and their families. Their efforts are to be commended, their activism is to be applauded, and their commitment and dedication is to be respected. We also have our fair share of critics. We welcome the criticism and debate it, for it helps us to learn, move forward, and mold into what we need to become. But let's do that in a comradely and mature fashion. We are involved in militant, radical, revolutionary politics. We know what needs to be done, and we are well aware of the difficulties and dangers that lie before us. It is currently one of the most difficult and challenging times to be an Irish Republican. Many people feel abandoned and betrayed by former Republicans, and rightly so. Many people ask, what was it all for? They ask, was it worth collectively thousands of lives and thousands of years in prison for the Ireland we live in today? We appeal to all old comrades to be up and doing. Those of you who have lapsed, return. Those who have lost heart, cheer up. Those who have heart, pull in the indifferent and stimulate dormant or defunct branches. Let us ring in the new with rejuvenated animation. The RUC and their neocolonial subordinates in the Free State are currently waging a relentless campaign of harassment against Republicans. The entire Republican community was enraged when we witnessed the vicious attack against the Republican Sinn Féin parade in Lurgan, carried out by the RUC. The entire Colour Party was arrested and participants injured by Stormont's military wing. We utterly condemn the actions of the Crown Forces, and we send solidarity and support to the RSF along with all those arrested and injured. Stop and searches are a daily occurrence, which degrade and abuse our human rights. Homes and party offices have been raided and ransacked. Activists have been detained, interrogated, and in some cases jailed. Meetings have been disrupted and targeted by special branch, and even our attempts to feed and clothe the homeless have faced attack by state forces. The situation facing the homeless has reached endemic proportions. Republican activists are trying to help alleviate the pressures they face. 400 people a week are being fed at a revolutionary soup kitchen based at the GPO in Dublin. We can only imagine what the likes of James Connolly would think about that, given that over 100 years ago, he and others fought and ultimately gave their lives to, quote, cherish all the children of the nation equally. The social and economic problems of this country are caused by foreign occupation and the crisis of capitalism. Both need to be brought to an end using any means necessary. The class struggle is currently at its most intense in decades. It's surreal, but somewhat expected that Republicans involved in helping those most in need within our communities face attacks by partitionist forces. The British state and Free State fear us, and fear us they should. We are in the business of revolution. There's nothing romantic about it. It's dirty, it's nasty, it's vicious, and it's dangerous. That's the reason it's called a struggle. Today, Brexit is something that is often mentioned and talked about. Comrades, England's difficulty is Ireland's opportunity. If Brexit can weaken and damage the Union, then as Republican revolutionaries, it is our duty to take advantage of it. We, the Irish people, are best served by independence and to be in control of our own destiny. Irish affairs need to be free from the interference of London and Brussels. Anti-Republican lickspittles and Stormont are guilty of cementing and administrating British rule in Ireland. They have followed a long tradition of quislings before them. Stormont is the bastion of British occupation. The revisionists, reformists, and those who practice the antithesis of Republican socialist ideology should have their hypocrisy challenged at every opportunity. IRA volunteers did not fight and die for an internal settlement. For every IRA volunteer who fell in battle, their objective remains unfulfilled. Every martyr interred in the graves around us set out on active service with a vision of a socialist Republican mind, a vision of an Ireland free from British interference. That vision has yet to be realized. It is our duty to finish what those volunteers gave their lives to achieve. As a former Republican prisoner, I can't leave here today without giving a mention to our comrades behind the wire, the Republican prisoners and the struggle they face. We send solidarity to all captive comrades north and south. The battles they are involved in on the inside are an extension of the freedom struggle we are involved with on the outside. As socialist Republicans, we need to form our ideological and strategic ideas and platforms. We need to, and we are, organizing in towns, cities, and counties across Ireland and beyond. We are agitating socially within our communities, and we are vigorously pursuing our goals. Comrades, the business of securing a socialist republic remains unfinished. The objectives of those who fought in 1916 to the present day remain unfulfilled. The goals laid out in the 1916 proclamation are as right and as just to fight for today as they were then. As we leave here today, we must recommit and rededicate ourselves to the Republican struggle. I urge you all to join the Festival of the Oppressed. Our enemy is strong, and we must prepare ourselves for the struggle that lies ahead. We have to be prepared for this fight, and it will be people like these gathered here today who will follow the well-trod path of rebellion. We have to be the agitators for liberation. Join the revolution, comrades, and bring this fight to a finish. Finally, comrades, we will end on a note of defiance. I have this message for the forces of British imperialism. Quote, "We have no compassion, and we ask no compassion from you. When our turn comes, we shall not make excuses for the terror." Karl Marx. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
This next song I'm going to do is dedicated to the 14 innocent civilians whose lives were cruelly taken away from them from the Royal Paratroop Regiment on Bloody Sunday. Song called Sunday Bloody Sunday. It was Sunday, bloody Sunday, when they shot the people there. The cry of 14 martyrs filled the very air. Is there anyone amongst you that's to blame it on the kids? That a soldier boy was bleeding when they nailed the coffin lids. Sunday, bloody Sunday, bloody Sunday's the day. Sunday, bloody Sunday, bloody Sunday's the day. Well, you claim to be a majority, well, you know that's a lie. You're really a minority on the streets Emerald Isle. When storming bands are marches, they've got a lot to learn. Interment is no answer, it's those mothers' turn to burn. Sunday, bloody Sunday, bloody Sunday's the day.
sent to colonize the north. You wave your fucking Union Jack, well, you know what it's worth. How dare you hold to ransom our people proud and free? Leave Ireland for the Irish, turn the British back to sea. Sunday, bloody Sunday, bloody Sunday, today. Sunday, bloody Sunday, bloody Sunday, today. Oh, and it's always bloody Sunday in the concentration camps. Keep the falls root free from ever, from those bloody English hands. Repatriate to Britain, or even call it home. Leave Ireland for the Irish, not for London or for Rome. Sunday, bloody Sunday, bloody Sunday's the day. Sunday, bloody Sunday, bloody Sunday's the day. Sunday, bloody Sunday, bloody Sunday's the day.
If it's not all a game, with Bible in one hand and a sword in the other. They came to purify my land of my Gaelic Irish mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers. With their own ancient customs, laws, music, art, way of life and culture, tribal in structure. We had a civilization when they were still not under our nations. We suffer with the Native American, the Indian in Asia, Aboriginal Australia, the African people with their history so deep, and our children still weep, and our lives are still cheap. You came from Germany, from France, from England and from Spain, from Belgium and from Portugal, you are the much the same. You took what was not yours, went against your own Bible. You broke your own laws just to outdo the rivals. But did you ever apologize for the hundreds of millions of lives you destroyed and terrorized? Or have you never realized? Did you never feel shame for what was done in your country's name? I'm wondering now, who's to blame? I'm wondering if it's so inhumane. And still they teach you in your school about those glorious days of rule and how it's your destiny to be superior than me. But if you've any kind of mind, you see that all humankind are the children of this earth, and your hate for them will chew you up and spit you out.
Back in the USSR, we'll be back after this short break.
It's Steph.
I'm Jenna.
I'm Malvina.
I'm Ben, and we're hanging in the studio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
2018 marks the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and the Guelph Black Heritage Society wants to continue their celebration of freedom with a tribute to the minister and activist on Thursday, April 12th. The evening will begin with a spoken word performance, followed by a screening of the short film, The Witness from the Balcony of 306. The evening will conclude with a performance by artist, singer, and songwriter, Dave Archer. Doors open at 6:30 p.m., and the event starts at 7. Admission is $20 and includes one drink ticket. Tickets are available at the door or online at eventbrite.ca. Come out and celebrate the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with the Guelph Black Heritage Society on April 12th at the Art Gallery of Guelph, 358 Gordon Street, a physically accessible location.
Close to Home, an eclectic mix of Canadian music on CFRU 93.3 FM. Thursday mornings at 7 a.m. with your host, Tom Rydell. I'll make it easier for you to get up and greet the day. Close to Home, Thursday mornings, 7 a.m.
From April 6th to the 21st, the Guelph Little Theatre invites you to experience The Ghost Island Light. Written by renowned Canadian playwright Peter Cawley, it is an emotional roller coaster that'll have you sitting on the edge of your seat one moment and laughing your head off the next. This is the story of a lighthouse keeper, his beautiful young wife, and his charming assistant as they are stuck on a barren rock island with cramped quarters in the early 1900s. the eerie sounds of broken organ pipes, thrashing waves, and the haunting beauty of riverboats will instill terror in your heart with the fear that the ever-present stream of light will go out. Do you dare venture forth to experience these thrills at the Ghost Island Light? The Ghost Island Light will be taking place April 6th to the 21st at the Guelph Little Theater, 176 Morris Street, and tickets are $22. For tickets and more info, call 519-821-0270 or visit guelphlittletheater.com. This event is physically accessible.
You're listening to Back in the USSR. Now, before the break, we had Damien Dempsey with his song Colony, talking about the history of British colonization in Ireland, and of course, expressing very clearly, you know, the solidarity of the Irish people fighting for liberation with people around the world who do the same, who are fighting against colonization, fighting for liberation, fighting for self-determination, understanding it's an international matter. And before that, we had IROG with Bloody Sunday, about the massacre of British paratroopers massacred 14 unarmed civil rights protesters on January 30th, 1972, in an event which is eerily like the Gaza protest massacres that are going on now in Palestine. Now, I basically messed my voice up big time reading that speech that was given by Stephen Murnay, radical Irish Republican activist in Derry in Northern Ireland on as of Easter Sunday. I read that entire thing, four pages, and I probably shouldn't have, because I did mess my voice up, but at the same time, I think it is still important to talk about that, to talk about the situation in Ireland when it comes to the liberation struggle there, the anti-colonial movement there, which is what the Irish Republican movement is all about. It's all about anti-colonialism. It's all about resisting colonization, resisting British rule in Ireland. That's what it's about. It's pushing for Irish self-determination, fighting for Irish self-determination in all areas of life. And a lot of people over here don't even know that movement exists. You know, certainly don't know who this guy is, you know, Stephen Murnay, who, of course, was a political prisoner. Like, in Ireland, has definitely, you know, experienced, been imprisoned by British forces in Northern Ireland, and knows what that's like, and expresses solidarity with the people in Gaza on that basis, in the sense he understands what anti-colonial struggle is all about. You know, most people don't even know he exists, and most people don't know, in Canada, don't really know about the Irish Republican movement, or all that much about it, the fact that it's still going on now. It's not dead. It hasn't gone away. It's simply in a new phase of struggle. And that's still going on, and they still express their solidarity with the people in Palestine who are fighting against colonization there, and people around the world fighting against colonization. They understand the internationalism. And this is a shared struggle. This is a shared struggle of all people who are fighting against colonization anywhere. Now, the most recent episode of The Empire Files by Abby Martin, you know, who's one of my favorite journalists out there right now, her most recent episode on Telesur, which covered the recent events in Palestine, these massacres taking place in Gaza, it was blocked in 28 countries. 28 countries for its opposition to the apartheid state of Israel. So I can't bring that episode to you now, but what I can do is air an episode of The Empire Files from 2015, in which Max Blumenthal, you heard from in that report by Ben Norton on the recent massacre in Gaza on Good Friday, in which Max Blumenthal, in this episode of The Empire Files from 2015, you know, who also appeared. Max Blumenthal also appeared in this recent Banned episode. He outlines the conditions in Gaza in the bloody aftermath of the last Israeli invasion of the area in 2014, as well as the sophisticated and effective resistance to that invasion by the Palestinian people, which often does not get talked about, and the kind of tactics that were used, which effectively defeated that invasion, that Israeli incursion into Gaza back in 2014. And I talked about last week how armed struggle is sometimes a necessary tactic for colonized people, and that no liberal idealist Western activist has any real right to criticize that. You know, just that they know they have no right to criticize the when the people at the Oka Reservation outside Montreal rose up and took up armed struggle in the early 1990s during the Oka crisis and faced up against the Canadian army with guns drawn. They have no right to criticize that. These are people standing up to colonization, fighting for their liberation. And sometimes they do need to do that.